Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and this show is designed to help you be a better ultra runner every single day. Now, because the show is designed to help you be a better ultra runner, I'm always open to answering questions about what's going to help you be a better runner. And one question that I get all the time is, what is a no-crash energy source that I can get before I go out and run? A lot of people say I try coffee, pre-workouts, or energy drinks, and ultimately they make me feel jittery, anxious, or they make me crash throughout the day. And I struggled with an answer for a while because there really is like no specific pre-workout or energy drink designed specifically for running. Also too, I know some people, including myself, when it comes to intaking stuff in your body, you want to make sure that it's super clean, not filled with a bunch of fillers and hidden ingredients and crap. You really want to know what you're getting. So as I was doing just some kind of research into some companies, there was one company that stood out above all, and that was Earthy. So Earthy is a company that makes a 100% organic pre-movement beverage designed to give you clean, focused, and sustained energy for all types of movement, especially running. And the cool thing is they're completely transparent about all their ingredients. They tell you every single ingredient that's in there, the dose of each, and even the farm where it all comes from. And here's a look at what's inside of their mixture. It has lion's mane to help you focus. It has cordyceps to increase blood flow and oxygen while you're running, which is super important. It has beetroot to also increase blood flow. And it uses caffeine source from the gayuza leaf, which is a clean, smooth caffeine source similar to yerba mate. So it gives you that sustained energy without the crash. Plus, it tastes great. It's a cacao-based drink, so it tastes just like a warm cup of hot chocolate. Super delicious. I know I'm going to be using it during my cold nights at Cocodona. The founder, Brooks Bash, he was on the Everyday Ultra podcast a while ago, and he actually just got finished running 100 marathons in 100 consecutive days to prove that Earthy works, and it certainly does. Give him a follow on Instagram to see the journey. It was nuts and wild, but the point is, Earthy works. I've been using it too on some of my night runs or colder runs just to get myself warmed up, but also get some sustained energy as well while I'm out there. It really works, and I've been loving it in my training. And the cool news is they just dropped their starter kit, and they're also giving us a discount to give you 20% off the starter kit to try out Earthy, and that's the code EverydayUltra when you go to liveearthy.co, or you can go to the link in the show notes to get 20% off your order to give Earthy a try. That's code EverydayUltra for 20% off when you go to liveearthy.co or the link in the show notes to get 20% off to try your order of Earthy. And ultimately, that's going to help you to run for longer, for faster, have more focused energy, and ultimately not get the crash that some other caffeine products have in there as well. Can't recommend it enough. It is amazing. Give Earthy a try and use that discount code if you're interested, for sure. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Now let's get into this amazing edition of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm super pumped for this episode. And it's funny, not only was I a guest host on our guest's amazing podcast, Distance to Empty, which, by the way, if you're looking for an incredible resource for diving into all things 200s, interviewing with athletes who are taking on 200s, training for 200s, and even our guest today and his co-host Peter are also 200 aficionados as well. When it comes to like the guidebook and the playbook for 200s, it's the podcast for you. And I had the honor to be a guest host on their episode breaking down Cocodona 250, which if you want to learn all things Cocodona, definitely check out that episode. It is a cool one. I've already implemented some things in my training from the episode as well, and it's made a huge difference. But enough about the episode. Let's talk about our guest today. So I first stumbled upon our guest when I was watching the Cocodona live feed, and every time that they had the camera on this guy here, he had the biggest smile on his face. And I was like, this guy's energy is awesome. And as I was following him along, he gets into the top five. And I was like, oh man, like this guy is like really rad. He's like super fit. He's making it happen. And then the year after, same thing, watching the live stream, I'm following along, big smile on his face, gets in the top five again in an even more competitive field. And I was like, dang, like this guy is awesome. And then Distance to Empty came up, started to get into his world. And, you know, we had some mutual friends where I kind of got to learn a little bit more about him. And lo and behold, had him here on the podcast today to talk about his extensive history of 200s. But not only has he done Cocodona 250 twice, placing in the top 10, he's done multiple, not just 200-mile races, including the Bigfoot 200 and Moab 200 and the Triple Clarion of 200s as well, but also various 100Ks, 100-milers, and even 200-plus milers, such as the infamous, famous Tour de Jeanne 330K, which he did last year as well, which is, you're not familiar with that race, look it up. It is brutal. A lot of climbings, ups and downs, insane conditions. But that is the epitome of this guy who we're having on the podcast. He loves to push himself. He loves to go far distances. And he's just got such a great attitude. So I'm so excited to dive into this amazing episode with our guest, Mr. Kevin Goldberg. Kevin, thanks so much for coming to the pod, man. Excited to chat.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Joe. I'm stoked to be here. I had a blast when you came and guest hosted for us on Distance Empty, and I'm just happy to be back and chatting again.
Yeah, 100%, man. And thank you again for having me as a co-host. And I will tell you, so you told me that tip on the podcast where it was like practice flat running, do a little bit of a, like climbing and then coming back and doing some flatter running. So my long run this past weekend, I actually implemented that exact strategy. So I will tell you, like, I've been implementing the stuff, learning from your podcast or from our conversation, and it's been super, super helpful. But and I want to dive into all things, like, obviously your training for Cocodona coming up, a little bit about, you know, Tour de Jeanne, like your improvement in the 200 space too. And you're also not just doing 200s, but you're doing 100Ks, 50Ks, 100-milers, 50-milers, like you're doing it all, which is super, super cool. But how did you first start out in this? Like, you know, this isn't something you've been recently doing this. You've been doing this for years and years. How did you get into the sport of trail running, but more specifically, like, dive into the love of 200s itself?
Yeah, for sure. So trail running is something I literally stumbled upon. I didn't know trail running was a thing. When I met my now wife back in college, she was training for Chicago Marathon. I was kind of like a, you know, gym bro, like intramural sports college guy, you know, would do like 30-minute runs on the treadmill to warm up. So I was in pretty good shape. And, you know, what she was doing on the weekends was her 3-4 hour long run. So I just started like doing that with her on the weekends because she was doing them. So it's like, all right, if you're doing it, I'll do it. And then I signed up for Chicago Marathon. Absolutely loved it. Did it in like 5 hours. It felt super easy. I was like, oh, I can do this in like 3 hours. No problem. Signed up for another marathon, did not do it in 3 hours, realized that it's really hard to go a lot, you know, that much faster in the marathon, and that kind of wasn't the style of work I preferred. Like, I didn't want to do the work to get faster in the marathon. Started doing some like trail running and hiking in the New York State area where I lived at the time. And back in that time, it was the North Face Endurance Challenge. They had like different races all over the country. And one of them was like going on at Bear Mountain State Park. And we happened to be there for a hike that day. And we were like, what is this? Like, you know, all these people running shirtless, handheld water bottles, like just was like the coolest thing. So like actually stumbled upon an ultra, went home, looked it up online and signed up for the DC equivalent, the North Face Endurance Challenge down in Washington, DC area. That was 2013 or so. So I was absolutely hooked after my first ultra. Fast forward a few years and kind of how I, you know, to get to your question of how I found that the long multi-day stuff, the 200s, I ended up needing some hip surgeries in 2016 and 2017. So that required almost a full year off running, lots of time on crutches, non-weight bearing, lots of time to think about whether or not it was worth it, right decision. Was I going to be able to get back to like my love of trail running? So I was looking for sort of an event that would prove to myself that this was the right choice and that I can get back to where I wanted to be. And, you know, in true like go big or go home fashion, I stumbled upon Bigfoot 200 and I was like, there we go. It's, you know, a full year out from when I was able to start running again. So I had a full year to go basically from zero to 200. And yeah, trained for the 2018 Bigfoot 200 and was immediately hooked, and I've done 9 or so 200s since 2018.
Dude, that is so awesome, man. And there's just so much respect in your story of that I have for being in a situation where you're going through a really brutal surgery process where you're not even spending time on your feet, right? Like you said, like no weight bearing, and you at this point where it can be easy for anyone to think like, can I run again? But for you, you know, you not only said, can I run again, but what can I do to do more, which is super cool. Like what kind of drove that mindset? Because I know like sometimes, and you know, I've been lucky to not have, you know, any really big kind of surgeries or situations like that. But I've heard from people, you know, when they do get in these things, they wonder, oh, am I ever going to get back to where I'm at before? But like, what was that caused you to say like, let's go bigger. Like let's push the envelope a little bit once we're back on our feet.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't all like positivity and rainbows. Like I definitely, you know, I put on some weight. I definitely was as inactive as I could be. You know, there were some things I would have been able to do, like go to the gym and, you know, crutch around and lift weights and swim and even some light cycling. And I wasn't all in on those activities as I could have been. You know, there was a little bit of wallowing, I guess is what I'm saying. But as far as like the, you know, sight set on the future, like I always knew once I was able to like get back to weight bearing modalities, like I was going to like pour myself into that. I had the time and drive to do that. So as soon as I was able to get back on my feet, I set my sights on Bigfoot and signed up. So I think I was able to start weight bearing like in March or April of the year. And then, you know, Bigfoot's in August. So I signed up in August for the following year and I was able to start running around August and September. So I had that full year to train. And from there, it was like motivation remained like sky high from that moment to the race. So I knew if I could get myself through kind of the lower end of recovery that once I was able to start doing the things that I wanted to do, I was going to really pour fuel on that fire. And luckily that worked out. I mean, you know, sometimes you don't ever get that stoke back, even if you say you're going to. But yeah, I was able to find that and push through for that year of training to Bigfoot 2018. And looking back at like that race, like I still was so, like I felt really fit going into that race. But in retrospect, like I think I was, you know, I was still coming off of almost a year of inactivity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I finished that race much more mentally than I did physically.
Mm. Was that like because do you think it was also maybe a little bit of fact like just being a new distance at 200 kind of going further than it has before? Did that kind of like somehow play into it too? Because I mean, as you know, like I'm going for my first 200, so like, and a lot of people saying like, oh, like, yeah, sure, I'd like to be competitive, but I just don't know what to expect. And so was there like a little bit of just kind of like that newness of the distance, or was it more just kind of that whole year of inactivity maybe catching up? Like, curious to hear how much of like that unique experience maybe played a role in it too.
Yeah, I think it was, honestly, it's probably more the former. It's probably more the new distance and the unknown. Like, and I still feel that way going into 200s. Like, I learn so much from each of these races that, like, by the end of it, I feel like a rookie again. Like, I feel pretty confident. Like, I feel like a pro going in, and by the end, I feel like a rookie just from the mistakes I make and the learnings I take away. But yeah, for that first one, I had no goals other than to finish. I think the cutoff for Bigfoot was 116 hours or something like that. Like no expectations, no goals. You know, as the race went on, I realized like, oh, maybe there could be a 7 in front of my finishing time. Like I started, you know, thinking like that and like getting excited about those sort of things. So it did go really well, but it was really like throwing darts in the dark. Like I was just like, no idea what to expect, no idea when and how much I was going to sleep. Eating, you know, I had never seen the course. It was totally like a new experience. And like, there's just so many variables in these races. So I think having no expectations did help. I think I had a better experience and a better performance than I would have had I had been like a little more structured and planned out.
I love that. I love that no expectations thing, especially like when you're going to like the first of a distance, right? Because it's just like the unknown. There's just so many things to go in there. And you raced that at a time where there was really wasn't too many resources like on 200s. I mean, now there's like your podcast, there's tons of YouTube videos covering like the very famous 200s. And like, but when you did it, like it was at a time where it was still relatively unknown in like the mass ultra running world. So like you're really going into it dark on there. what were some of like the really big key lessons you learned on the first one? And obviously I also want to talk about like what you've learned like across like, you know, 200 after 200, but I'm sure you can agree a lot of the times in the first of a distance, I feel like sometimes they carry the most potent lessons for a lot of ultra runners. I know that's like true for me in my experience. From that first 200, like what are some key lessons you learned that you like continue to take into each 200 that you toe the line for today?
Yeah. So the biggest thing I learned was, you know, going into a night three of mostly continuous like motion and lack of sleep is a really weird experience, especially for the first time. Like it's super weird. Like you go to a place that you've probably never been. And it's a lot less weird going to that place the second time. But the first time it's a strange place, you know, it's a very weird state of being. And I can't really even explain it until you've experienced, but I think you should just kind of be prepared and welcome that like weird space that's going to, you know, come in on night three or night four. The second big learning was like everything you've experienced in 100 is so exacerbated in a 200. And I don't necessarily mean that from like a difficulty, like, you know, it's not like that much harder or anything. It's just like, you know, where you may have a couple of highs and lows in 100, you could have a dozen highs and lows in a 200, you know, like there's so, it's so much more of a continuous roller coaster where, you know, 100 might have a few peaks and valleys, that the 200 is a little more extreme in the sense where it's ever changing. And like, you know, things don't always get worse. Things don't always get better. Like this, you know, the next sunrise is always going to help. There's just so many more opportunities for, there's so many more opportunities for failure and mistakes than there are in a 100. You know, in 100, if you make a few mistakes, you could be in trouble, whether it's your time goals, performance goals, or just to finish. Mm-hmm. Where in a 200, you have so much more room for mistakes, and you will make mistakes. Like in a 100, like it's possible to race 100 perfectly. Like we've seen people do that, right? Mm-hmm. Very few people can race a 200 perfectly. Like even the people who are winning it. I mean, look at, you know, McKnight last year, me last year. Like I slept on night one last year. I've never slept on night one at 200. I was wrecked like going into that race. Just had a terrible night of sleep the night before. Like it's just, there's so much room for mistakes. It's just trying to minimize them and like maximizing recovery from those mistakes. So like expect to make a dozen mistakes, like significant ones, but you know, focus on how you'll respond to when those mistakes happen and the recovery from them, as opposed to like trying to eliminate them. That would be the biggest takeaway. Where in 100, I'm trying to avoid mistakes, and at 200, I'm trying to recover from mistakes.
Dude, that's so good. And that's so insightful, because it's like you're expecting the mistakes to happen. It's just managing your reaction versus like managing the mistakes from happening in the first place, which is super interesting. So for you, like, and this could carry into like, you know, Cocodona last year and just kind of like your other 200s as well, but like, let's just say a mistake popped up for you, or maybe you can give an example, like how do you, like what goes through your brain to like really like course correct it super quickly, making sure that like your head stays level? I mean, obviously you've been going through several 200s at this point, like about like we said, like 9 or 10, which is like super awesome. Like, and so like, what's your process for like troubleshooting on the go when problems arise?
Yeah, more often than not, it's shaking it off and realizing that there's probably nothing you can do about it. You know, it's forgetting something at an aid station. It's dropping something out of your pack. It's you know, not taking the food you planned to take. And like my kind of mindset is that, you know, there's very few things that you can't survive one leg to the next aid station with, right? Like I've forgotten headlamps in 200s at night. I've forgotten full bags of calories. You know, like these are things that like could very well happen. You know, even with a crew, your crew's tired. They're almost as tired as you are. You are tired. Like these things aren't common. You most likely won't forget your headlamp at night, but it could happen. It happened to me at Moab 240 in 2019. You know, if that happens, you wait for the next person to come and you say, "Hey, I forgot my headlamp. Can I ride in your shadow? You know, can I stick with your shadow?" Like chances are, if you had to wait for them, then you can keep up with them. Same goes for food. You know, I forgot my food and my headlamp at the same time at that race in 2019 at Moab. And I actually ran the next 24 mile section with Mika Thews, who I've shared a lot of 200 miles with. And I used her headlamp and ate her applesauce because she's vegan and that's all she had. I still give her crap about that. But like, you know, there's the people out there, like even your fellow competitors are going to want to help you if you need it. And like, there's nothing you can't make, you know, do without to the next aid station. Like there's no reason to quit because you forgot a puffy or a headlamp or your food, or you didn't bring Tylenol. or you got lost and you have to recalibrate, and you know, everyone adds a couple of miles on at these races. There's you know, you're not the only one making these errors, and you're not the only one. Everyone's got their thing, you know. There's no one gets through perfectly and unscathed. So just if something goes wrong, that's your thing. Someone else has their thing. Like, it's, you know, we're all, you know, just making it work out there.
Mm-hmm. Dude, so good. That is so good, just to, you know, be able to, number one, just understand, like, and just say, hey, this is a problem, this is a situation, then just like, what do we need to do to, you know, accommodate those things? Is it tagging on with someone because we forgot the headlamp? Is it, you know, being able to just accept that we're just not going to have food and maybe ask for, you know, someone else on the course for some food? Like, I love that very, like, objective approach. Like, and you can just tell by the way that you're saying this, like, it's like, it's very much like, here's the problem, what's the solution? Keep moving forward. And I love how that's like a really pivotal part of your strategy, which I'm sure like has helped like continue to see success along the way. And I'm curious, like, you know, through your journey, like, and I have your ultra sign up pulled up here where my eyes are going, like, on the first time, you know, you did Bigfoot, like we're in the top 30, and then all of a sudden, you know, came around to Bigfoot again, 18th, Tahoe 13th, Moab 9th, like you're climbing up the ranks. You came fourth overall in the Triple Crown of 200s, which is great. Next time you did Bigfoot, fifth place. So you're climbing up the ranks, Cocodona fourth, and then Cocodona again, fourth last year. So like, it's so cool to see the incremental performances. Granted, you know, different courses and stuff, but still, you know, it's cool to see that. And even the climbing performance was in the Triple Crown year, where you're going year after year, or month after month, I should say, with the races. When you think about maybe some of like the biggest lessons that have like exponentially helped your progress, right? Like really, really helped. Like ones that when you think about, you're like, oh, these were like the pivotal lessons like in my 200 races. Like, are there any that come to mind? Any examples, like any stories, like anything that like you can like go back on and be like, that was a moment where it was like a game changing lesson for me?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, it's been fun for me, like trying to be more competitive in these races. And it's the reason I keep going back to Cocodona, because I think for the time being and for the foreseeable future, it is the most competitive 200 in the US. And I really want to perform at the most competitive 200 in the, you know, like that's out there. I want to compete against the best, which is funny because I get so like amped up and anxious about competition. So you'd think I would like want to go like race Oregon 200 or somewhere where the scene's a little quieter, but for some reason the real competitive one is what calls to me. And I think for me personally, my improvement has come much more from strategy and logistics than it has fitness. Mm. And that's not to say I'm definitely more fit today than I was in 2018. And I think I've been more fit every subsequent year since 2018. Maybe I peaked in 2020 and I've kind of tried to hold on, but who didn't have more time in 2020, right? So fitness is for sure a part of it. And I think durability over time, like the more you run these events and the more you keep your volume at a place where that's required to run these events, like it rolls over year, it stacks. So the fact that I've been doing this for, 6 years coming up on, that's crazy. You know, I think that helps. Every year I feel stronger, I feel more durable, like I'm breaking down less later in the race. But again, while all those things are true, I really do think that performance improvements are coming more from logistics, better sleep management, better aid station management. I think a lot of the people who I'm finishing ahead of, I'm moving slower than when we're moving, but I'm moving more often than they are. At least that's what I've noticed from, you know, Pieren over Strava's and other people's races. I think it's really breaking down the you know, time when you're moving versus not moving, and just trying to be really efficient out there, because you don't necessarily have to be fast to find success at these races.
I love what you talk about, like the being efficient in the non-moving time, because I was even talking with someone who had like a very similar time moving time to String Bean in 2022 when he won, but like the stoppage time was like almost double or something crazy like that. And like, you know, the place finishing between the two were just like a huge gap. And I'm like, wow, like the moving time was the same, but like literally like you're down like 15 spots because of just like the pause time, which like always blew my mind. And like, what are some things that you do to be most efficient in those like aid stations, sleep time, like stoppage? Like, what are the big things? I'm sure obviously like, you know, having a crew involved is like a big part of it too, but like, what are like some key things that you've done to like really reduce that aid station kind of stoppage time, or, you know, just transitory period time in general?
Yeah, crew is huge. Like having them know your goals and know like how long you typically want to spend in an aid station is really helpful. Like they have to be, because like you're going to get to a point where these aid stations become such oases that like it's really hard to will yourself to leave. They, especially at night, they're warm, there's food, there's people, there's company. Like you may have been alone for a long time, or maybe you've just been with your pacer who like has been, you've been marching in silence for hours. Like, you know, they really are like these like beacons and that you like moth to a flame. So having the crew like be able to like say, all right, it's time to go and get you out is really helpful. I like to have a few aid stations in mind. And again, everything I plan is a loose plan because things go off the rails very easily out there. Where several aid stations are going to be longer stops, and several aid stations are going to be like breeze right through, like, hey, here's a new bladder, here's what you need, and you walk out eating. Especially on day one to two, like maybe through like Sedona. There'll be some quicker aid station stops. You know, last year I wasn't in Jerome for, you know, much time at all. I wasn't in Deer Pass for much time at all. Like took a longer stop at Sedona. Like, you know, it's almost like two off, one on for like shorter stops versus longer stops. Because you are going to, there's going to be aid stations where you need to spend, you know, even when you're not sleeping, 30, 45 minutes. There's a lot to like do to take care of yourself, and you don't want to not take care of yourself because that will snowball into a bad place. So yeah, I think it's just staying really cognizant of it, which is really easy to do on day one, becomes harder on day two, even harder on day three, could be near impossible, you know, on day four and five. So what you don't want to do is start taking an hour to 2 hours in every single aid station on day two and three, because that adds up really quick.
Yeah, for sure. And I like how you have like the segmented kind of aid stations. It's like, hey, here I'm going to take a quicker stop, but here I might take a little bit more of myself. And I like how you mentioned the loose plan, right? It's not this like rigid plan, because kind of going back to your few previous answers, like things will go wrong in a 200, and therefore the plan like is not always going to stay the plan, like especially in 200. So I love that loose plan. And you actually gave, I what stuck with me even from our conversation on your podcast was, you know, you just talking about when you have the plan, it's like, if I arrive here at night, do this. If I arrive here at day, do this. It's not like this aid station, no matter what, do this. Like, and I thought it was genius, like to have that flexibility in there. So I think like what's super cool and what's speaking to me about like hearing your thing is like you're very flexible, very malleable. And I feel like that like leads to a lot of success in 200s based on like what I'm hearing from you, which is just super, super cool to hear. And I'm also like super curious, like from like the mental side of things. And this is like more like Kevin Goldberg specific mentality, right? Like what, and you've done like 100 milers, you've done 50 milers, you've done like a shorter stuff as well. What are some like things that maybe like, and we already talked about like the flexibility thing with the mistakes, but like in terms of like pushing through the fatigue, pushing through those hard moments, like, you know, when you're mile 125 and you still have halfway to go, like what are some mindset things that you do personally that help you that maybe would be different on how you'd handle like a 50 miler or 50K, or maybe it's the same. Like, I don't know, but I'm curious, like for you, like what are the mental tools that you use personally that like help to motivate you, get you through things and basically get through the long, challenging ordeal ahead?
You know, in shorter stuff like 50 miles, 50K, 100K, like I feel like the pain is more acute, where I don't really have the mental capacity to like focus on like wanting to quit or wanting to stop or even wanting to like it's such a more focused effort that like my brain is occupied with what I'm doing, which kind of helps take away from like that problem, right? But in a 200, the intensity is lower, the pain is like death by a thousand cuts, and it's so, you have so much time with yourself to like to get into a really negative place, right? And it's going to happen often. Like I want to quit in a 200 like so often. Like I spend half the race wanting to quit. So a conversation I always have with myself, like at least daily during a 200, if not more, is like, okay, like I walk myself through the scenario of quitting. Like all right, like let's say I quit at the next aid station. Like what is the next process there? Like where do I go from there? And like I usually like I start to get embarrassed by the storyline, right? Like, all right, I go back to a hotel, I go to the hot tub, I go out to breakfast, I come back to the finish line to like cheer on friends. Like it's embarrassing. Like I worked really hard, and like the story that you know happens after I quit is like silly. Like if the answer is like, oh, I'd go to urgent care and then I'd go right home and I'd like have to recover for a long time, like that's a different story. That's a more acceptable story to me. but those are never the answers. Like I've never been in a place yet, knock on wood, where that would be the story. The story is always like, well, I'm going to go out to breakfast and then I'm going to hang out. And like, I'm just like, no, that's not why I came here. Like that would be like, that sounds lovely. I would love to do that. But like, that's so silly. I can't do that. So that's kind of how I talk myself out of quitting when I feel like I want to. Like I just allow for the fantasy of quitting and then like realize that that's ridiculous.
Hey everybody, just want to take a quick break in this episode to talk about another ultra running tip that has dramatically changed the game in terms of my ultra running performance, and it is in the realm of nutrition. Now, race day nutrition is crucial when it comes to finishing an ultra marathon. And in fact, stomach issues are actually the number one cause of DNFs in an ultra. So you got to make sure you're getting the right nutrition. And for years, I've been searching for the best of the best nutrition sources for running. And recently, I found the products that fuel excellently, taste great, and utilize science to prevent any stomach issues and lead to high performance out there on the trails. And those sources are the nutrition items from NAC. NAC is great because it goes beyond just simple carbs and electrolytes for fueling performance. It also incorporates protein and complex carbohydrates that are best to keep you going further for longer. It has protein because it helps you repair your muscles on the go, and it has a mix of both complex and simple carbs to avoid sugar crashes, as well as tons of electrolytes to help you replenish fluid. Typical running products generally lack at least one of these things since they are designed for shorter distances, but NAC is made specifically for ultra runners to help you go further for longer. They have hydration mixes, energy waffles, bars, and purees that you can use on the trail. My personal favorite products are the watermelon hydration mix and the berries and nuts bars. They taste great, they make me feel great, and I'm going to be using them pretty frequently in my Cocodona training and race as well. And because I believe in NAC so much, I partner with them to give you 15% off your first order with code EverydayUltra when you go to NAC.com and place your order. That's NAAK.com and using the code EverydayUltra at checkout for 15% off your first order. Or you can go to the link in the show notes to place your order. That's 15% off your order by going to naak.com or go to the link in the show notes. Use code EverydayUltra at checkout for 15% off your first order. Give them a try, nail down your fueling for your next ultra with NAC, and remember, fuel well out there on your ultras and you will perform well. All right, everybody, let's get into the episode and let's dive right in. I like that. Allow the fantasy of quitting for a second, and then you kind of come to realization and be like, that's crazy, because a lot of times like people want to just quit because right now like that's what sounds good, but you're like removing yourself from the present and like putting yourself in the future shoes and being like, future Kevin would not like this. So I like how you're kind of removing those stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, but on ultra sign up, I don't see any registered DNFs on ultra sign up. Have you ever DNF'd a race before?
I have not DNF'd a race, no.
Like, and by the way, for those listening, I mean, like, he's got results like registered since 2013. So like that is impressive. And do you go through that process, like, and all this stuff? And I know you mentioned for the shorter stuff, it's different, but like, do you feel like that's been a big kind of key to your success to not dropping out?
Definitely. I think, you know, I'm sure it will happen one day, you know, if I keep running ultras, you know, for the rest, you know, as long as I can, like, you know, DNFs are inevitable. And you know, I've prepared myself for that possibility, but when it happens, I don't want it to be my mind that takes me out. I want it to be something physical, something I missed cutoff, something out of my control. And so far that hasn't happened. I've had bad races. I've had really bad races, but, I've always been able to kind of march it in. And like, if I cared enough to sign up for a race, and show up to that start line, you know, then I think I owe it to the process to kind of finish it out. I'm more of a destination than process guy anyway, so I got to get to the destination.
I love that. That's so good. I love that. And I love what you said, like, owe it to the process. Like, that is just so awesome to like show up and have the respect for it out there and then get into the destination of that finish line, which is super awesome to see. And I'm sure like the competition like mindset has a play to do with it too. And like, you kind of touched on this a little bit before, but I'd love to kind of dive deeper into that, right? Like you mentioned like going through it, like a lot of this stuff was just finishing and just kind of doing the best you can. And when did it click for you to want to be competitive in these races? And then two, like you mentioned like a little bit about like wanting to show up at this, like these competitive 200s. I mean, if you look at the starting list on Cocodona, I mean, like when you look at any other 200 miler in the US, like no field compares this year. Like it is lining up to be like a very like you know, kind of like the depth of some of these like really competitive 100 milers in respect to the 200 mile sport, right? And so number one, like what drove you to want to be more competitive? And number two, what is it about that deep competition that attracts you way so more than just signing up for one with a very light field?
Yeah. So I think that like, I got the idea that I really wanted to be competitive at these races in at Bigfoot 21. I think I was surprised, like top five never seemed like really a possibility. And all of a sudden I kind of just found myself there. And, you know, I didn't really realize I was in that position until like mile 177 or so. I got into an aid station where there were like four or five people sitting, and it like jockeyed me into that position, because I just turned around and left. And like all of a sudden was in sixth at that point, and went and caught one other person. And then I was like, wow, maybe I could start like competing at these races. And that's kind of where Cocodona like entered the picture. And you know, like, I think I feel like it's the same drive, right? Like why I want to be competitive is the same reason I wanted to sign up for ultras, like to see if I can, like it's just a shift of like seeing if I can finish, seeing if I can get through this, seeing if I can, you know, conquer the course. Is just shifting to like seeing how fast I can go, how high I can move up in a field. So it's the same drive of like finding out what's possible and seeing what my own limits are. It's just a different measurement, right? Like, or a different thing to measure against. But yeah. And then the second part of the question, I feel pretty new to competition and pretty bad at it. Like, I'm good at running these things, but I'm not good at competing because of like I feel like I make a lot of mistakes, and I'm new to it, and I get really worked up about the whole thing. So like, that's where I see a ton of like room for improvement. And I think that's why Cocodona, because I think I can make strides at a race like Cocodona that I couldn't at some of these other races, where I might just go out and be on the podium without really working like for it specifically, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like you want it to be the challenge, because like that's like why you want it to be competitive in the first place, because you want that like extra or that answer to that question of like, what am I capable of, correct?
Yeah,
definitely. I love that. That is awesome, man. And that's just so freaking cool, because, you know, I think like a lot of people do hit a point like where, you know, I speak to a lot of ultra runners, but like, you do a lot of distances over time. And then like, I know a lot of people, they're like, oh, I know I'm going to finish. Like, I know that like, I'm going to finish this thing. And then it's like, what's the next level? It's like, okay, I can compete. I can go for faster times. And so I love how like, you're still like finding that satisfaction of the question of like, what more can I do through like pushing yourselves, and like, not even just like you said, throwing yourself into like, you know, one of the least competitive, it's like the most competitive one, which is great. And so when you think about like this year too, and like, I mean, you've even mentioned on the podcast that we did together on your show, like, you know, you want to go out and win this year. So like for you, where is that big shift for you, like in training this year? Like when you're thinking about like what it takes to win, because, you know, like it's a very stacked field this year. I mean, like I said, like I'm going to be trying to catch up with you out there for sure. Like, I mean, I think you definitely have a much bigger chance than I do for sure. So I'm curious to hear though, like what are some things in like your training that, you know, maybe you're shifting this year or doing differently, or even just mindset wise, just kind of going into it, that's like helping you to prime to get that one spot at the Cocodona finish line this year.
Yeah. So kind of like doubling down on my strengths, where I said, like, I think I do really well with logistics and strategy in these races. So, I've already kind of identified where I can save, you know, 6 to 8 hours just in purely in logistics, if I was to run the same race as I did last year. So I think really focusing on that efficiency and logistics portion of the race, like my goal this year is to go under previous course record pace, you know, hopefully that holds in this field. We'll see. I think it's going, I think a lot of people will, but I want to be part of the story, like that. So however many people went under course record pace, I'd like to be in that conversation. So logistic wise, I have a lot of things there where I'm, you know, I know how much time I took in doing this or that last year. And I'm hoping to take significantly less doing those things this year. And that's not running times. Those are like other things, you know, those are aid station time, sleep time, all these kind of transition things. From a fitness and training perspective, I haven't truly quantified this, so I'm it's kind of a loose strategy, but it is definitely happening. Where something I noticed last year is that the people who did beat me seemed to have been higher volume athletes than me. They were running more, and most of the people I beat were running less than me. So I don't think that's the end all be all of it, but, and I'm not a low volume athlete by any means, but I am running more in anticipation of Kokonona this year than I did last year. So, more 80 to 90 mile weeks, whereas last year I was more 60 to 70 mile weeks. So just trying to log more volume and be at a higher overall volume by the time race day shows up.
I love that. Yeah. And it plays into that durability kind of factor, like you mentioned before, like the durability over time. Like, it's not even just like the, you know, doing the 200s like year after year and year, obviously, like that helps the durability, but it's even in the training, right? Like getting your body to be durable, like through 80 to 90 mile weeks in there as well, which, like, that's awesome. And I love how you mentioned like doubling down on the strengths. Cause a lot of times when people's like, I need to get better, like they just focus on the weaknesses, but it's like, if you just can just double down on your strengths, like you can make big, big moves, especially in something like you said before, where it can make, you know, make or break top five, or like, you know, in the third, and then in, you know, top 30 is that aid station time and the efficiency and managing sleep and everything of the sorts as well. I'm curious for you also too. I don't think we even touched about this in the podcast that we had, but like, I'm assuming it's different now because you've been in the experiences before, but I'm curious, like, do you train anything like for like those sleep deprived states, or is it just more so a matter of like, you've done these races before in the past that like, you kind of know what it is and like, you don't even worry about it in training? Like, how do you kind of think about that? And the reason why I ask this question is because, number one, I'm curious myself, but I've never been in that kind of scenario. So I'm like, is this something that I'm just going to have to, you know, find out for my own, or like, is it, so just, and anyone who's interested in the 200 too, I'm sure they have the same question. So how do you kind of approach that into your training now, being, you know, 9 200s into your career?
Yeah. So I think, you know, first and foremost, I don't think you can truly simulate what you'll experience out there on nights two, three, four, in training. I just don't think it's really possible, unless you were to like run a practice 200, which I don't recommend. and you know, my take is that like, if you're training properly for a 200, you're carrying enough like general fatigue that sleep is so much more important than sleep deprivation training would ever be. So I think you're going to lose much more than you have to gain by like practicing running overnight or practicing like those sorts of things. It's my opinion that you're much better off just going in, and you know, you can mentally prepare for it. You can like imagine what it will feel like, and hopefully you imagine it will feel much worse than it actually does, so that you're pleasantly surprised. I think you should spend a lot of time like mentally preparing for how hard the sleep deprivation will be. But physically speaking, I think there is a lot more to lose than to gain by practicing that in training. I wouldn't worry about it. You know, personally speaking, I wouldn't spend much time worrying about it from a training and like adaptation point of view.
I love that answer. I think that's great. And I even like how you mentioned just, you know, just the risk reward kind of thing too, right? Because like, obviously if you're going out trying to practice sleep deprivation every weekend, I could totally see how that can just take a toll on the body. And even like you said, it's like, you can still prep for it by like imagining what it's feeling like, right? Like being visualizing the experience, or just kind of guessing, or like, I mean, I know I've been sleep deprived in my day-to-day life. And so it's like, okay, like this maybe times like a million and like a 200, like, let's just like see how I would work through that. So I love that strategy as well. And thinking about like kind of taking things to the extreme too, like, and I know you and I, we talked kind of offline about this, but I'd love to kind of bring it to the podcast here. It's like, you're wearing a hat from a big race that you did last year, the Tour de Gence, which if anyone's familiar with this race, I mean, you just know how brutal it is, like 330K. Is it 80,000 feet of elevation, if I'm remembering correctly? Is that the right number?
Me and my buddies who did it all got over 86,000.
86,000. Okay, so 86,000. So that's like wild. I guess just talk to me about that experience. Like, I mean, like that is just like, I mean, that is... when you, I guess maybe even just to start that, when you compare it to any of the 200s, is it just like a whole new level, like beyond belief?
You know, when I finished my first 200, it like warped and changed my perspective in such a huge way. It really opened up my world to like what's possible when it comes to like fast packing, backpacking, vacationing, experiencing like things on foot. Like it changed everything for me. Like it almost like made it feel like I had more hours in the day because I knew what I was capable of. Like I could see this much and do this much in a day. Right. Tour like shattered that to another level. I had never felt more physically and mentally prepared for a 200, and I've never been more wrong. And more like blown away. And like, I really, I don't know. I tend to not talk in like hyperbole, and like I almost like judge people who do and get like I, you know, it kind of annoys me. But man, I can't like stress enough how wild of an experience Tour de France was. I felt so ready for it, and it just like from the get go, I was blown away by its difficulty, blown away by how big and vast it is, and how like the climbs are like nothing. I live in Colorado. We have long, steep climbs. Like, you know, I did training in, you know, Arizona and California. Like some of the biggest mountains in our country are nothing compared to like what's over there. You know, 9,000 foot climbs, 9,000 foot descents in one shot. Like, it's just like nothing I've ever experienced. And it broke me. It took me 112 hours when my goal was 85. So, so I was out there for quite a lot longer than I had planned. I was ready to be out there that long. I was ready to go to cutoff. Like I had, you know, the crew and the supplies were there for that. But, it was like nothing I had ever experienced. And I can't recommend the experience enough. Like you can make that race kind of as enjoyable as you want, because the life bases are like restaurants, hotels, massages in each valley. You can almost treat it as like 750 Ks, where you take like a very long reset, like, you know, 5-6 hours in between each, and really like treat it as like a fat, like a supported fast pack. The cutoffs allow for that if you're ready for it. But man, I mean, I think the average 50K of that race is like 18,000 feet of vert. And you know, like it has an equal descent. So like you're going down that much as well. It's yeah. And the weather didn't disappoint. We got, heat, rain, sleet. Yeah, it was unreal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, even just the stats alone, but even just hearing like the 9,000 foot climbs, like I don't even think my brain is like can fully comprehend that. Like that is just like wild to even think about. And even just the ups, the downs, like the descent too, like, you know, I'm sure after a while, like that takes a number on the quads for sure. And to have that experience out there is just like totally wild, but it's super cool to see, like, are you saying, like, I can't recommend the experience enough, like despite just how like grueling it is. How has your perspective shifted on Cocodona and some of the other 200s, like based off of Tour de France? Like, do you think that it's an asset to go through like a really gnarly race like that and to go at something it's even harder to say like smaller scale, but like in the end of the day, it really is like, which is so funny. It's like Cocodona smaller scale. Like what the heck? But like, do you feel like that is like an edge for you going into this year and then even just competing into the other American 200s going forward?
I definitely do. I really hope that holds true. Like once I get out there and put it into practice, right? Cause like, who knows, like sitting here, you know, on the chair chatting with you, like that is how I feel, but it could be a different story because like, you know, the hardest ultra is often the one you're in, right? The one you're currently racing. So it's like, I really hope I'm able to hold on to that perspective in Cocodona this year, because what Tour de France did for me is it made like, I'm not scared of a single section of Cocodona, like not even remotely intimidated. Like, you know, like day one would be the easiest section at Tour de France, like bar none. So I really hope I can like harness that and hold on to it throughout the race, because yeah, you know, being removed from both, it's definitely shifted my perspective, and there's nothing scary about the American 200 courses. There's nothing as scary as Tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everyone talks about like that first 37 miles of Cocodona, the straight up climb to Crown King, like super hot. And the fact that you're like, it doesn't even match like the easiest section out of Tour de France. I mean, that's just gotta be, like you said, like even earlier to that answer, like a perception, just shattering event, like just to have something completely different out there. And then just knowing at that, cause I mean, if I'm thinking correctly, I'm trying to think of like the start field. I don't know if anyone else like top of the list has done Tour de France, like I'm thinking about. Obviously our buddy Aaron has done that too, and so yeah, I feel like none of those other guys, I think to my knowledge, have done it. Is that correct? I think
as far as I know, yeah, I don't think they have.
That's an interesting, yeah, so that's a cool experience to have in there, and I think it's something that's just more of an edge for sure to kind of go into. So that's like super excited, man. So I'm excited to see how that goes. The one thing too, I wanted to kind of also talk to you about is on Ultra sign up. I also see your sign up for Javelina. Which is super cool this year. And the reason why I think that's awesome is because that's similar to me. I'll be there too this year too, but And you kind of go through this thing in your schedule where you do like 200s. I mean, like, you know, after you did Tour de Jeanne, like the month later you did Kodiak 50K. And then,
was,
you know,
so that was a mistake.
Yeah. So you go from like big to like small. Was it a mistake? And just in the sense of it just being too close or like.
Oh, it was so I signed up because I was crewing a friend out there and I just was like, well, I'll run the 50K while I'm. And it was just like, I had a really good 10 miles. Like, I was like, oh, maybe I'm recovered. Like, I'm feeling great. And then just like. Oh man, it was such an awful race. I've never felt so bad. And it made sense. It was just way too close to Tour.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Cause it was like, pretty much a month after. Yeah. Like a month and 5 days, which is nuts. So, but like, you know, you've done that in terms of like going 200, then to like 100K, 50K and all that stuff. Do you feel like the 200s have benefited your performance at those shorter distances? And like also too, notably, I remember when you did Coca Dona and you did Western States, the Coca Western double, which is just, that's so cool. Like, I feel like that's like one of the, in my mind, at least, I think it's one of the coolest doubles that people can do. And not many have done it, but, talk to me, I guess, like if you feel like you're 100 miler or even just shorter distance have benefited from doing 200s, or do you feel like it's so different that it's intranslatable? Like, I'm curious to hear like how the relationship between those you've seen in your career has played out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, from a performance perspective, it depends on like the timing and the course, right? Like, mm-hmm. I do feel like when I'm in the middle of like 200 training, like I am for Coca Dona right now, I feel slow. Like, I feel like I get slower by design, right? Like, you know, if I want to win Coca Dona and I have to average a 15-minute mile, like, so it's okay to be slow. And on the flip side, like if I want to go fast at Javelina, the training has to be so different, right? So I think it depends on timing and training for the physical side of things. Mentally speaking, like I've definitely been able to hold on to that kind of like we were talking about the Tour perspective. Like I've been able to hold on to that 200 perspective for the 100s. And like if I can get this done in 24 hours or less, like I'm just getting warmed up. Like that's like I'm going to go be able to sleep in 24 hours. Like what a treat. So like, it really has kind of shrunk the hundreds into this, like, you know, because yeah, they're double the distance, but they're triple the quadruple the time, these 200s. So it really is easy to take a step back at the hundreds and be like, even if I have a bad race, I'm done in, you know, 30 hours. Like it's a short period of time when you're used to racing for 60, 70, 80 hours.
Yeah, and that's an interesting perspective to have, because I've even thought, I mean, much smaller scale, but like when I first did 100s, it was like, wow, like the 50Ks and the 50 milers just feel like so ridiculously short, when it's like the first time I've done them, it's like, wow, it feels like I'm out here like forever. So I can only imagine at 200 how that's kind of like at a grander scale, which is a cool thing for sure. Kind of like bring it to the tail end of the podcast, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, distance to empty real quick. And like what I want to talk to specifically on there is like, you've had on some like awesome guests on the show. You know, you've had on McKnight, Jeff Browning, tons of different legends in the 200s for sure. And you guys share your knowledge in there as well. I'm curious, like, because, you know, as a podcaster, like, I mean, I'm sure you can relate to this. It's like, you get to speak with so many people and get to learn so many different things, right? And so, and obviously, like, you know, you've listened to every single episode because you've been on every single episode. So, as a podcast host, like, I'm curious, like, are there any like lessons you learned from your guests that were like really like that have stuck with you, or like things that like you've learned that you're like, oh, that's like a great nugget of information, or anything like impactful in terms of like some of the interviews that you've done that has kind of carried with you like into, you know, your day-to-day training, so to say?
Yeah. You know, I think it was the Andrea Moore episode where I realized, like, you know, I have such big goals for Coca Dona this year. And like, I really want to, like, you know, hit my performance goals. And it's like, it's incredibly important to me. Like I've placed a lot of like importance on this goal. Right. But when I was, you know, chatting with Andrea, one thing I realized, cause she also wants to improve this year, and we were talking about like what that takes and everything, but I also want to still really like have fun and like remain true to like what first brought me to Coca Dona and like what I've done the past couple of years there. Like, you know, I kind of like to goof around out there. I like to spend time in the live stream and like chat with people while I'm racing. And like, you know, like if someone in Cottonwood is, you know, asking me about the race, I want to like sit on their porch and tell them about it. You know, like I want to perform my way, and I want to like stay true to like what makes this fun for me. So like, I'm not going to sacrifice that for performance. I'm still going to like be in that live stream chatting with people the whole time. I'm going to do those sort of things and hope that I am good enough to perform with those aspects. I don't want those to fall to the side to like get some like time goal. And I think, you know, chatting with Andrea really helped me realize that, that like that needs to be front of mind while I'm going through this training cycle and then leading into the race.
Yeah. Oh man. I love that so much because like, you know, I love the competitive aspect too, but like, I think, you know, and then I'm sure like, you know, you feel the same, maybe listening to like some other people, like we hear it all the time. Like people get very competitive. They focus on the competition. And then like after a while it becomes not fun anymore, or like, it's just so intense on the competition that you forget the journey. And like, you said this best when we did our podcast, you're like, Cocodone is like an adventure. It's fun. It's awesome. And dude, I remember like seeing you in the live stream. And for those who don't know, in the live stream, like Kevin was like in there typing in the comments, like, you know, while he was out there racing, and everyone was like, isn't this dude like in the race? Like what the heck? So it's just like those things are like so fun. And so I love that you want to keep like that, like energy in there. Like, is there anything you're doing in training to like help to just prime that? Or is it more just setting the intention and just kind of being like, you know, getting out there? Cause like, listen, like I've been kind of in like a training bike. I know how like intense it can get sometimes. Like, is there anything you're doing in training to like, just kind of keep that fun balanced in with the competitiveness?
I'd say it's more of an, you know, intention set, but I do think it's really important in training to like I have a training plan. I try to follow it to a T, but like, I'll pretty quickly adjust if like my wife wants to run with me, friends want to run, if they're faster than me, if they're slower than me, I won't worry too much about those things. You know, I'll jump on an opportunity to keep it social versus keeping it competitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. It's like you have the plan, but you're willing to be flexible, which is similar to like having fun in a 200, right? You have fun, like you get to talk with someone for the race, you hop on the live stream a little bit, which is so cool to see. So yeah, man, I think, and I do think that's like another edge is like, if you're out there having fun, like, I mean, that's like a big part of just like resiliency and being able to like get through like the tough times. So when it comes to someone who's like one of the most well-rounded athletes coming into Cocodona this year, you definitely hit the list in terms of, I think, people who have a lot of the skills and the abilities to go out and have a great day out there, my friend. So I'm super excited to follow along your race. It's going to be super, super fun to hear and to share some miles with you, hopefully out there. Like I said, I'm probably going to be the one trying to keep up with you out there, but I'm stoked to see your race. Man, I'll be cheering for you out there, even though, you know, we'll be on the same starting line. But for anyone who wants to listen to you, Distance to Empty, right? Like, as you know, Kevin is just like given tons of knowledge here on 200s. Like, if you're looking for even more of that from Kevin and also the guests that he interviews as well, please check out the podcast. If you like Everyday Ultra, you like Distance to Empty, check out the link in the show notes. It's in there as well. We did an episode together too, where I was the co-host on there. So it was super, super beneficial if you're looking for Cocodona stuff, but definitely recommend. I'll also put Kevin's social links in the bios to, in the show notes below. So please follow him along on all social fronts as well. And and then look out for him on the live stream this year, either on the actual live stream or in the chat or both. But anyways, Kevin, dude, so awesome to have you on the podcast, man. And for my last question here that I ask every single guest on the Everyday Ultra podcast, this is a show about helping our listeners be better ultra runners every single day. And so my question to you, Kevin, you already shared so many good tips, but the question coming to you is, what can our listeners do every single day to be a better ultra runner?
Focus on the things outside of running and give them as much energy as you do your training, because I think it's all about balance, and I'm not always good at that. In fact, I'm more often not good at that, but I find that I'm at my best and my happiest when I'm pouring energy into other things that make me happy in addition to the training and the running and the racing.
Yeah. And I lied about being the last question, because I have one quick follow-up on that one too. Like, what are those areas for you? And then how do you balance that in with everything? Cause you also have a full-time job too. You have a wife. And so like, and obviously like people hear training for a 200 and like, you know, even I remember like going to 200, I'm like, oh geez, like on top of like all the other priorities in my life. So I guess the first thing is like, what are the other important priorities in your life? And then two, like, how do you make it all fit so that you can show up in those areas super, you know, beneficial? Cause I 1,000,000% agree with you. I believe if you're showing up in the other areas of life, your running does get better too. And your life is just better overall. So curious to hear like your approach on those two things.
Yeah. I mean, the honest answer is I don't always show up in those other areas, right? Like that's the advice that I gave and need to follow more often myself. I think when I'm at my best and I am showing up in those areas, you know, I'm taking maybe extra rest days to go fly fishing. I'm walking my dogs more. I'm reading more. you know, I'm doing more of the self-care things that I know I should be doing and need to do, but don't always do. One thing I do nearly every day that I think is a huge, you know, I don't record it on Strava or anything. It's not something I plan, but I walk my dogs an hour a day, about 3 miles a day. And I'm often reading while I do that. Like I'm reading and walking. And I just think it's a huge like mental health thing. I get outside, I'm keeping it easy and you know, easy movement. And it's, you know, like walking an extra hour a day, you're going to walk a lot in your 200. I don't care if you're at the first place or last place, like you're walking a lot. So, you know, add in some extra walking. Walking's great.
I love that. Yeah. And I think even Killian Korth was talking about that too in like a recent blog post. He's just like walking like crazy too. Like, you know, it's like a lot of the things that people, I think if you haven't been around 200s or seen them, like are almost shocked by, right? It's like, wow, like you're actually like walking like a decent amount of those things. So to get that out there, spending time with the pups, like listening to a book, like along the way, like that is awesome, man. And I think every ultra runner can relate, like including myself, where it's like, you know, sometimes the other areas in your life, it definitely feels a little bit more lopsided when it comes to like peak training. But I think having the intention there, like it is one thing that, you know, I think we can all relate on as well too, for sure. But Kevin, man, this was freaking awesome. You are awesome, my friend. Excited for your race at Cocodona, and looking forward to sharing the miles. And dude, thanks again for coming on, man. This was awesome.
Thanks, Joe. Super fun.
Super fun.